Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time British spy show viewer.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that feels it's a crime that more foreign language films don't play in Spokane. I say that even knowing that the movie scene here is far more diverse than it was, say, when I arrived in 1980. Still, thanks to every streaming service from Amazon Prime to Criterion, movie fans don't have to depend on their local metroplexes anymore. It's all there to screen in your own personal home movie theater. That said, let me return to the theme of crime. As usual, we'll be talking about two movies during this show, and both, each in its own way, deals with crime. The first, Blink Twice, is a blend of mystery and murder, while the second, Sing Sing, is a serious look at a group of men struggling to find meaning by performing theater even while facing decades-long prison sentences. Let's begin by taking a trip conceived by writer-director Zoe Kravitz. That trip takes us to an island owned by the noted entrepreneur Slater King, played by Channing Tatum. A charismatic guy with a well-publicized dark side, King ends up inviting a young woman working as a banquet server, Frida, played by Naomi Aki, and her BFF Jess, played by Aaliyah Shawkat, to join him there to party with a gaggle of his friends. What starts out as fun gradually turns mysterious and then grim as Frida slowly realizes that paradise isn't all that it seems. As a first-time director, Kravitz shows a decent sense of both how to use a camera and propel a film's narrative. As a screenwriter, though, Kravitz, because of a few gaping plot holes, can't help but make the film feel more like a mere rant than a fully rendered murder mystery. I can't remember the last time, if ever, I've seen a movie that posts up front an actual trigger warning. But for moviegoers who come to Blink Twice thinking they're going to see something as entertainment-oriented as, say, the similarly plotted Knives Out mystery Glass Onion, it's probably appropriate.
Well, it is that way for a while. I mean, the first, I don't know, hour and some change of Blink Twice is a pretty innocuous kind of hangout on an island sort of movie, although
and kind of predictable.
There's
too.
Always the specter of something mysterious, yes, and potentially supernatural going on the fringes. And I guess I'll just kind of walk through my experience of watching this movie, because I walked into Blink Twice not really knowing what it was about. I had seen some of the marketing materials, but I had managed to avoid a trailer and I didn't read any reviews. I had seen it compared, and I think this is an apt comparison, and I think it's a movie that is turning out to become one of the most influential movies of the last couple decades. I've seen this compared to Get Out, and so I was waiting for the other Get Out shoe to drop in the plot, and eventually it does. But at the very beginning of Blink Twice, I was really taken by, as you mentioned, the style of the movie. I thought that it moved really well. There was a lot of creative editing and cinematography. Adam Newport Barra shot this. He's known for a lot of TV work for stuff like The Bear and Euphoria, but he also shot The Last Black Man in San Francisco, which, Dan, I know is one of your favorite movies. And I thought the movie just looked great. And once they get to that island, just the sun-dappled shores are really captivating. And then, of course, once everyone starts doing seemingly every drug under the sun, you start to get these kind of hallucinatory, fragmentary sequences where things are edited out of order and just things just don't seem quite right. And I thought all of that disorientation was really effective, and I got pulled into the movie. And on top of that, the cast of this film is absolutely stacked. Beyond the people you mentioned, you've got Christian Slater and Kyle MacLachlan and Haley Joel Osment and Gina Davis and all of these great people that keep showing up. Simon Rex, who I loved so much in Red Rocket just a couple years ago. I think that once you do get into the part of Blink Twice that we probably can't talk about because it gets into spoiler territory, when it does become more of a full-on horror film, because that is what this is, let's make no mistake about that, I was still pulled along by it because I thought what Kravitz was trying to say was powerfully handled within the context of this kind of horror allegory. I don't think that there's any subtlety here, really. And I think, you know, this is going to be a Your Mileage May Vary kind of movie because it's dealing with really unsavory and really horrifying and, as you said, Dan, triggering stuff. And whether or not you think that the movie manages to pull it off or whether it earns the right to deal with this material in this kind of way, I think is going to be, you know, it's going to be up to you. But for the most part, I was really taken by this, and I was surprised how taken I was because it isn't completely unpredictable. I will grant you that. But I thought it was made so well and acted so well that for this kind of film, I thought it was a lot better than some of the horror thrillers and mysteries that we've been seeing lately, even if it isn't maybe the most ambitious of the lot. I do think that Zoe Kravitz has a real career behind the camera. I think she has a great eye and a great sense of pacing and even tone. This movie has a very tricky tone, and I think it pulls it off for the most part. The problems I have with the film Blink Twice, I can't really get into because it would spoil the movie.
Well, I can get into some problems that I had with the film because I think you're being very generous toward it. And I, too, think that Zoe Kravitz has some potential as a filmmaker. I'm not sure she demonstrated it here because I thought these messages were sort of writ large in some ways.
Yes.
And I couldn't, you know, it's like, oh, come on. Can't we, you know, in this era of Me Too and Jeffrey Epstein, which, of course, is the parallel to what's going on, couldn't you have handled this a little differently? So that was one of my concerns that I had. I also thought that it dragged out a little bit too long in sort of the prefatory lead up to what ultimately happens. So I thought the pacing of it was a little off to my way of thinking. Beautiful in many respects, I'll agree with that. And the acting I thought was really mixed. So you were praising this sort of ensemble cast, and I had a much different reaction. I didn't think that Naomi Ackie was particularly well cast. Gina Davis, oh my goodness, what was she doing in this film? She was terrible. I mean,
I don't think so.
She's my age, and she was being this like goofball.
Yeah, that's the point of the character.
Yeah, but it was too much. It was too over the top. The person who I liked the most, interestingly enough, was Adria Ajona. Because I did not like her, you may remember, in Hitman. And I thought she was great.
I thought she was really good. And
in
that character,
film.
Because she comes from this reality show called
Hot Survivor Babes.
Yeah.
And at first you think that's just going to be, oh, she's making fun of the vacuity of reality TV. But that does end up paying off in the plot in a way that I thought was pretty clever.
Yeah, it does. Right. And in fact, that's the ironic part that goes against all predictability in the film is that there's a switcheroo there, which I really appreciated. I didn't appreciate so much more. I mean, we both talked about how good the film looks, and we credit it to Zoe Kravitz, and you kind of have to because she is the director. But I think that her talent is, as you point out, Nathan, she makes great hires. So, you know, we know filmmaking is a team effort. So you depend upon the people who are going to advise you. What's it going to look like? The cinematographer, where are you going to place the cameras, the camera people? I think that what she brought to this film is probably the weak part, and that is she conceived this whole thing from the very beginning. And I don't even know if I can say what her original title was. Well, yeah, I will. It was called Pussy Island, and she changed that to Blink Twice, which I don't really kind of understand. But at any rate, it's a more mysterious title.
And it's a throwaway line in the movie.
It is a throwaway line in the movie. My biggest problem with this, and we may argue about this, I think the best performance was put in by Channing Tatum. We've never seen him in this kind of a role before. I mean, there's a more subtlety to his character. There's a scene in which he says, I'm sorry, about a dozen, maybe two dozen times.
And it starts to lose its meaning.
It does, exactly. Uh-huh. After a while, it's that exercise in which you say a word or a phrase so many times after a while, it doesn't mean anything. And I just thought he was really good. And on the other hand, I thought Naomi Ackie was totally miscast. I just could not understand why anyone would want to invite her to this island.
Well,
you know,
I can't defend that because it would give it away. But I think
there was a vulnerability and there was something else that was going on. And having worked, you know, in the catering industry, I mean, you're always sort of looking in on the outside. So it starts out at this banquet. And so these two women are looking at this other life. Like, what if? But I think the reason why that doesn't work so much between Channing Tatum and Naomi Ackie is I don't think – you wonder why would she be interested in him? Okay, he has a lot of money, but so do some other people she's probably encountered in that setting.
Well, and he's paying attention to her in a way that no one else does.
Right.
Exactly.
Yes. And then, you know, why would he be interested in her? And I think we do get some sense of that later.
None of it, which
almost,
I accepted.
You know, it's almost like his motivations aren't pure or something like
that.
Oh,
you
say?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay, I'm maybe sounding a bit more effusive in my praise than I actually am because I am defending this. And I did like Blink Twice, and I was surprised that I liked it. I was looking online, and I'm seeing that it is a more divisive film, and I understand why. And I think once it gets to that final act, which plays out more or less like I was expecting it to. There's lots of blood spraying across the screen, and there's some genuinely horrific stuff. I mean, the trigger warning at the beginning isn't fooling around.
It's justified for a variety of reasons.
So. But I think that, you know, you're going to have to sit with it a little bit, whether or not you want to engage with this material at all. But it gave me something to think about, and I wasn't expecting that when I walked in. So
yeah.
There you go.
Well, at any rate, that was our discussion of Blink Twice. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Sing Sing. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Meet Spokane Public Radio at a farmer's market near you this summer. Grab some fresh local produce and stop by our booth to pick up SPR fans, window stickers, and station information. SPR staff, volunteers, and hosts will be in our community at farmers markets this summer. Visit the events section on SpokanePublicRadio.org to learn when and where you can meet us at the market.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbin, and I discussed actor-turned-director Zoe Kravitz's film Blink Twice. Let's now turn to another crime-related film, this one involving a group of men struggling to find meaning while serving out prison terms. One of those men is John Divine G. Whitfield, played by Coleman Domingo, a guy serving 25 to life in Sing Sing, the maximum security prison in upstate New York. G, as his fellow inmates call him, is a smart, educated, and talented guy who, no surprise, claims to be innocent of the murder that he was convicted of, but also is the heart of the prison's RTA program. RTA, which stands for Rehabilitation Through the Arts, offers inmates like G and Clarence Divine I. Macklin, playing himself, the chance to perform theater and in doing so confront the vulnerabilities lurking beneath their more hard-edged temperaments. Based on Sing Sing's real program and starring, like Macklin, several real-life inmates, the film, directed by Greg Quaidar, who wrote the script with Clint Bentley, blends fiction with reality to follow the various characters as they team up to perform an original play. While not a perfect movie, Sing Sing is a powerful statement, told with humor and drama, that offers a meaningful look both at the pain of individual struggle and the power of art to reshape lives some would consider lost and beyond all redemption.
It's difficult to characterize this film because Sing Sing is a narrative film, but at the same time, it has elements of documentary. And the reason why it does is because 80% of the cast is composed of people who are or were incarcerated. And so there's a reality feel to this in a way that is hard to simulate when you're casting for a film such as this. And of course, the two most important things about Sing Sing are the characters of G and Divine I, played respectively by, as you pointed out, Coleman Domingo and Clarence Macklin. And so it's that relationship between these two men that tells this story of friendship and survival and so forth that I thought was handled really well, and others may disagree, but I'm just putting it out there. So the premise is based on a real story. So it was the subject of a short story, an article, I guess, titled The Sing Sing Follies. And I think it was in GQ, right?
Maybe. It was a magazine article, yes.
Right. So it was 2005, and this guy wrote about this experience of this RTA program. So the author was embedded briefly and was writing about that. And so I think that the notion of its being based on a true story, you know, now we see inspired by a true story, akin to a true story, maybe sort of could have been a true story, but this is a true story. And I think that this worked for me individually because I have had some experience and involvement with programs such as Alternatives to Violence, which goes into prisons and deals with conflict resolution and has been around for more than 50 years, or even in our own community, Revive that provides services and reentry services in particular to formerly incarcerated individuals. And so this felt real to me because it was real in many respects. The play that they're producing is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it's hard to describe. It's titled Breaking the Mummy's Code or something, and it's a time travel production. But the fact that these guys are actually willing to suspend their disbelief in the movie Sing Sing and get into this production, I thought was pretty remarkable, because I think at every turn I would have been saying, what, are you kidding? No, I don't think so. But I think that the real find, we already know about Coleman Domingo. I mean, he was nominated for an Academy Award for his portrayal of
Bayard Rustin.
In Rustin last year. So, you know, he's an actor in his 50s, but he's been around for a long time. I think the real find here is Clarence Macklin, who's a graduate of this program. And I believed him at every turn. And that's what made the movie special to my way of thinking, were these performances by everyone in this ensemble cast.
The movie that this reminded me of was one we reviewed just like a couple months ago, the movie Ghostlight, which was also about, you know, the transformative power of acting or of theater or of, you know, being in a group where you're disappearing
True.
Into other characters. And, you know, and like that movie, I like and dislike similar things about Sing Sing. There are moments of, as you mentioned, great truth and a real sense of naturalism. And then there are other moments where the plot itself is very predictable. You know, we've seen it a million times, and it's possible that a lot of these things do mirror the real experiences that these guys have. But within the context of a narrative movie, I had a little bit of trouble with them. And then this is another instance where I can't really talk about some of them because it would be giving things away, and I would like people to go in as, you know, cold as possible. It's also one of maybe the only prison dramas I can think of that doesn't have any explicit violence in it. There really isn't any. There is some, it's implied or it's all off camera. And I've been grappling with that too, because I thought, is that really what it would have been like? But then I was thinking about, there's a moment in this movie in Sing Sing where all of the prisoners are sitting and they're watching like a cartoon or a comedy and they're all laughing. And I thought about that scene in Sullivan's Travels, the great Preston Sturges film, which is about, you know, in times of distress, people usually don't want to escape into art that is reflecting that same distress. So maybe there's something going on here. I have a really big issue with a stylistic device in this movie, though, and I have looked at other reviews and I haven't seen other people complaining about it, so this may just be a me problem. But I really disliked the musical score in this film. It's by Bryce Dessner, who's one of the members of the band The National, who've made some music that I really like. And he did it with the London Contemporary Orchestra. I just found it really oppressive. In the scenes where it's used, I felt like it was telegraphing everything I was supposed to be feeling. And then when they would have a scene where it was just these guys talking about what they were really feeling and what they'd really experienced, and there's no music and we're just listening to the words, it works so much better than when this oppressive musical score comes in. And it was just pushing me away from the film and making me resent this choice. But again, I think that's a personal thing where it seems like nobody else has been having this issue, but it's just something I had to bring up because it comes up a lot in the, there's a lot of music
I agree.
In this movie.
Sure, no, and I'm glad you did bring it up, Nathan, because I just want to underscore the fact that it is just you.
Hey, that's fine. Sometimes it's lonely being correct.
I have to say that, you know, I've been trying to put together a list of the best films that I've seen in 2024, and Kneecap was one of them, a movie that we talked about recently, but Sing Sing will go down on my list also. The music didn't bother me, and some of the predictability maybe of the plot is overturned. There's one of the major characters just kind of disappears for maybe predictable reasons, but that's kind of a heartbreaker. And there's a switcheroo between our two main characters that could be seen as predictable, except that the performances by both actors are so strong.
Yeah.
I mean, Mary Pat, you talked about Macklin, who is an absolute discovery. There is one scene in which the director, Quaidar, lets him just stare for up to 6 or 7 seconds, just stare with the most god-awful, deadly, murderous stare, in which you go, wow, I totally believe this character. Yeah. And I'm a sucker. I'll admit this. I'm a sucker for movies in which you have guys who are hard guys who are willing and sometimes forced to, but ultimately willing to face up to their vulnerabilities. And it causes me to tear up every time. And so I liked Sing Sing a lot.
And one of the issues that I had with this particular film is the fact that, Dan, when you introduced it, you said for crimes they've committed. Well, one of the sort of subplots here is the fact that Divine G, the Coleman Domingo character, insists that he is not guilty. And so he's become sort of a jailhouse lawyer and working on behalf of other people in terms of their parole hearings and their clemency hearings in the movie Sing Sing. And I think that, you know, we don't know for sure if he committed this crime, but he finds some evidence to support that he did not. But the justice system is not going to allow that to determine his fate ultimately.
And the real Divine G has a supporting role in this movie. And so if you want to know what happened to this real character, you can look it up. I will say one thing that this movie, Sing Sing, does really well is portray just the daily indignities of being a prisoner. The idea, not only that you have no privacy, but, you know, when he is in one of his hearings, they say, well, you're an actor, so are you acting in this hearing?
Right.
Or tear apart his cell.
I mean, this is a story about human dignity, tearing it down and building it up.
And I do want to say, before we close out, that when this movie ended, I leaned over to my wife and said, he's getting the Oscar for this. I'm calling it right now. He's incredible in this film.
The only other thing I wanted to add about it was the setting itself, which was filmed in several different locations, is as much a part of the film as anything else. So, you know, everything you're
although there are some beautiful shots that are not my recollection of having visited different prisons or detention centers or psychiatric facilities. So, yeah, it looks a little bit nicer than maybe is actually the case.
And that was our discussion of Sing Sing. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder and Mary Pat Druthart and I discussed Blink Twice. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words uttered by Robert De Niro in the character of Al Capone in 1987's The Untouchables. You can get much further with a kind word and a gun than you can with just a kind word. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.